So, Jesus is the good shepherd. And I guess we quite easily have images in our minds about what that might mean. I guess that our thinking may be around the sort of images that we have of shepherds, maybe out in the fields caring for the flock, picking the sheep, little lambs up when they're struggling. It's a very pastoral, very gentle sort of thing. Maybe the image that we have in our minds of Jesus saying, I am the good shepherd, is very much the kind of gentle Jesus, meek and mild kind of image. But what did Jesus really mean when he said, I am the good shepherd? After all, he wasn't speaking in 21st century Britain. What did Jesus mean? Let's listen to what it was that Jesus said as we try to work that out. Carol is going to come and read for us.
Today's reading is John 10, chapter 10, 11 to 21. The Good Shepherd and His Sheep. I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I am the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my Father. The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, he is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him? But others said, these are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? This is the word of the Lord.
So Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. And especially in the Psalms in the Bible, God talks about his people being his flock. It was actually there in that Psalm 95, which we used together at the start of our service. We are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. So God's people are his flock. And actually, when God called someone to lead his people, they were to do that as a shepherd. So when David was made king, God told him, you shall shepherd my people Israel, and you shall become their ruler. But even David, that great king of Israel, wasn't perfect. And after him, others came who were just further and further from the ideal of this shepherd. And then years later, through the prophet Ezekiel, God promised that because those who he'd called to be leaders of his people, shepherds for his people, had just messed up so much, he himself was going to come and be the shepherd for his flock. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. So you see, when Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, the people who were listening to him then would have heard the fulfillment of that promise from hundreds of years earlier. Finally, God had come to be the perfect shepherd. But what would that involve? What would it involve to be this good shepherd? The first thing Jesus says is that the good shepherd would die for his sheep. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Now, being a shepherd in Jesus' time was a pretty hazardous sort of occupation. Out in the hills, there could be all sorts of savage animals, lions, bears, wolves, any of which would be very happy with a nice lunch of lamb. And if a flock didn't have a real shepherd, just someone who was kind of hired to look after them, well, you would not expect such a person to hang around when danger appeared. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees a wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. The hired hand is only interested in his own well-being. He's in it for what he could get out of it. It's actually just what Ezekiel had spoken about centuries earlier. This is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who take care only of yourselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you don't take care of the flock. But a good shepherd wouldn't do that. If danger threatened, a good shepherd would be there doing all he could to protect his flock. Indeed, that could possibly mean, with these wolves, other wild animals around, it could mean that a shepherd might actually sometimes get killed. But I don't know if you noticed, that wasn't quite what Jesus said. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He allows himself to be killed. So why would a shepherd do that? What good could a shepherd be to his flock if he was dead? There would have to be some drastic need to justify that. And Jesus, by calling himself the good shepherd who would die for his flock, was actually flagging up the fact that this flock needed someone who could do that. You see, the flock, God's people, didn't just need someone who could guide them, because actually they were hopelessly incapable of following. They needed someone who could rescue them. Someone who could die the death that their sin deserved. And only one person could do that. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So this good shepherd was going to be a shepherd who would die for his sheep. He'd also be a shepherd who was the one and only. Jesus said, I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd. You see, when Psalm 95, which we used at the beginning of the service, when it talked about people being God's flock, it didn't actually mean the whole of humanity. It's God's people who are his flock. And in Jesus' time, obviously that was the Jews. But Jesus was saying he hadn't just come for the Jews. He had other sheep, people from every race and background. They would be brought into his flock because there was only ever one flock. And it means that even though the world then was as full of different religions as it is today, maybe even more so actually, Jesus was saying that actually he was the only way. It's very much similar to what we'll hear in a couple of weeks' time. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There is only one flock because there is only one shepherd. And there is only one shepherd because only Jesus was able to lay down his life for the sheep. So we've got a shepherd who would die for his sheep. The good shepherd would be the one and only. And the good shepherd would be forever. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again. In actual fact, I think it would be better to say the reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life in order to take it up again. Jesus' death for the sheep was never to be the end of the story. His purpose was for an eternal relationship with his flock, one that actually mirrors his relationship with his Father. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. I actually think that's one of the most amazing things in the Bible, but it's very easy to kind of sort of slip past it. Jesus says that the relationship that his flock should have with him is the same as the relationship which he, as the Son of God, has with his Father. That kind of complete, intimate, total relationship of complete love and trust and obedience. The relationship that Jesus has with God the Father is the relationship that we should have with him. That is just mind-blowing. And it certainly means that Jesus isn't just interested in us knowing about him. It is this deep, deep personal relationship that's what he wants for you and for me. So that kind of relationship that there has been from eternity between God the Father and God the Son is the relationship that we will have with Jesus now and for eternity. Because the first thing necessary for that was for Jesus to die for the sheep, dealing with the alienation that sin had caused between a holy God and his far from holy people. But then Jesus needed to rise again, triumphant over sin and death, and pour out his Spirit, because it's his Spirit who's the one who makes that new relationship real. And Jesus himself, the good shepherd, is the living shepherd. Jesus is saying that as the good shepherd, he invites us to a living relationship with himself. I think there's just so much more than we would just naturally think of in hearing Jesus say, I'm the good shepherd. Because he was saying that he was someone who would die for his sheep. Someone who would be the one and only unique way to God. Someone who would have a relationship with us forever. And there's one more important thing. The good shepherd is someone you must listen to. I have other sheep that are not of this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. What does it mean to be part of the flock? Listening to Jesus' voice. You find the same thing later in this chapter. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them. And they follow me. And this is really important, because what Jesus is saying is that being part of that flock means knowing that Jesus has died for you, knowing that he has made access to God for you, and knowing that he will be with you forever. But he's also saying that you aren't automatically a member of that flock. His sheep are the ones who listen to what he says. It's those who pay attention to Jesus who are his sheep. And it's serious, because the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. But if you think that you don't actually need Jesus to die for you, because really you're basically quite a good person, you're a decent, respectable person, and you're sure God's happy with you. If you think that, then you're not listening to what Jesus says. If you think that you can make your own way to God without needing Jesus, if you think that kind of all roads lead to God in some way, you can just choose which one suits you, then you're not listening to what Jesus says. If you think that God is there to do what you want him to do, but you've not really got any interest in a relationship with Jesus as your Lord, you're not that fussed about following him, then you're not listening to what Jesus says. And if you're not listening to what Jesus says, can you really claim to be part of his flock? You see, there is a real challenge hidden in this wonderful news. It's only those who listen to the shepherd who are part of the flock. If you're not interested in what the Bible says, if you kind of might look at it occasionally, but you're only going to sort of obey it when it tells you to do what you've already decided to do anyway, that sort of thing. If you don't want to follow where the shepherd leads, I'm afraid you're not part of his flock. That might be something that you've never really thought about before. It might be something you're sitting there thinking, I just do not understand what that guy is on about. You might wonder, how on earth can listening to what Jesus says so long ago actually make a difference now? You might be thinking any of those things. I mentioned earlier that in a couple of months we're having a confirmation service. In the lead up to that, I'm going to be running a course asking just those sort of questions. So even if you're not even thinking about confirmation, it would be a great opportunity to think this through, because this is serious. Of course, as every parent knows, listening doesn't always mean obeying. And I guess that every Christian here will be able to think of times when they have listened to what God says in the Bible, have had every intention of following it, and then have somehow managed to drift off and do just the opposite. Does that mean that we're not really part of the flock? Well, it doesn't. I think it might be reading a bit more into what Jesus says than is strictly justified, but it's here, I think, the image of the sheep is so helpful. Earlier this year, some of you will have been here during Hope Morton 2016, and one of the people here on the mission team, George Martin, was telling us that as a farmer, he had kept sheep, and they were always getting lost. If there was a gap in the fence, they would find it and end up out on the road in danger of being run over. Take it from a sheep farmer, sheep are stupid. And Jesus says that we're like sheep. And he's right, isn't he? Just like sheep, we'll do the same thing. We might listen to the good shepherd, then drift off in the wrong direction. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned our own way. It's true. But that does not stop God loving us. God will never throw you out of the flock. He is always at work drawing his foolish sheep back. You see, there is the world of difference between listening to what the shepherd says, wanting to do it, but failing, and then coming back and asking for forgiveness and going through the same cycle again and again and again. There's a world of difference between that and, quite frankly, not even being interested in listening to what Jesus says. With the good shepherd, it's the sheep who listen to his voice and who trust him, who really are part of his flock. So Jesus is the good shepherd. He's the shepherd who has given his life for you. He's the shepherd who is the only one who can bring you to the Father. He's the shepherd who wants to have a living relationship with you, a relationship that is the closest relationship you can imagine. That's what the good shepherd has done. That's what he wants you to enjoy. So the question that each of us have to answer this morning is, are you listening to him? Is the good shepherd your shepherd?